And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Dennis Dodd joins the show today for a Doddcast edition. We look back at the college football playoff rankings released on Tuesday, and Dennis questions the committee's transparency. It was a column he wrote for CBS Sports. We elaborate on the topic, and in doing so, as usual, navigate the entire college football world and the playoff scenarios. Make sure that you are subscribed to the SEC on CBS podcast so that you can get the Picks podcast first and enjoy the Doddcast. Back here on the SEC on CBS podcast, Wednesday morning, Dennis Dodd, a Doddcast edition of the show. Dennis, good morning. I hope you are doing well. We have a fun night of college basketball, but in the middle of two basketball games, go Jayhawks, was the release of the college football playoff rankings. And this particular batch, coming after a weekend where number 2, 3, and 4 all lost in the same day for the first time since 1985, there was a lot of interest, a lot of intrigue to see where some of these one-loss teams, like a Louisville or Ohio State, where are they going to land? What's going to happen in terms of your Clemson and Michigan following their first losses? The new rankings are revealed. Ohio State is number 2, Clemson ahead of Louisville. Lots of outrage, but I instead want to look at each move individually and think, Dennis, it seems we joke that they make it up as they're going, but there is a little bit, and I don't want to say that it's dangerous because that's making it feel a little bit bigger than just college football. We need to remind ourselves this is college football, but doesn't it feel, especially at this point in the season right now, that there is a lot of flexibility in what matters and what doesn't matter?
Yeah, there's flexibility, Chip, because all those three teams that lost can win out, win their leagues, and easily get back into the playoff. The only, I guess, incongruity comes with the Big Ten is if Ohio State beats Michigan, then that's probably really good for Ohio State, because then Penn State goes, and Ohio State's sitting there already in the minds of the committee, according to these rankings,
as a top four team.
As a top four team,
and right.
In fact, number 2 this week. Now, again, they tell you that, you know, we tear it up and do it all over again each week. Well, human nature tells you that can't be true, and I know it isn't true, having done the mock selection committee, but. And they have favored Ohio State in this process historically. We know that. So the question then becomes, which major conference, in that scenario, which major conference champion gets left out? And from what I'm seeing and reading and hearing, it looks like Washington right now, and the Big Ten possibly would have two teams.
The Big Ten has a good chance to have two teams. I will be on the radio. I will be on College Football Rundown. I will scream about not letting yourself be too moved, upset, or influenced by college football playoff rankings to a certain point. But I need to sound the alarms at some point. And this is it, as we have only 2 weeks of full regular season action left. Then, of course, the magical 13th data point. Don't forget about that data point.
That's right.
So I'm hearing you say that Ohio State, because the Big Ten is where things are the most interesting, because there are all the scenarios between Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State. And Penn State, because of its head-to-head win against Ohio State, most likely benefits from Ohio State beating Michigan unless Penn State loses. Now, it is important to keep in the back of your mind, this Penn State team is very young. It has never dealt with these kind of expectations. I think the Nittany Lions will be Big Ten title contenders in 2017. This feels a little early, so I am not ready to rule out the possibility that, you know, Penn State loses to Michigan State, a Michigan State team that looked a little bit spunky this past weekend. I think against Rutgers, but I think that there is a fascinating discussion around Wisconsin. I think that Michigan certainly can make this easy if Michigan is able to beat Ohio State in that last game. How do you see that Big Ten East shaping out, and where does Wisconsin fall in all this? Do the Badgers have a shot? If the Badgers beat Penn State in the Big Ten championship game is our two-team Big Ten playoff scenario. Maybe Ohio State and Wisconsin is the most likely combination?
Yeah, I think right now, I mean, as I sit here right now, I think it's, yes, a two-loss champion, either Penn State or Wisconsin allows Ohio State in as well. Not allows, but I think that would be, they would be in the top two as well. Because Wisconsin, for obvious reasons, I think what that would be then six top 10 games, 5-1 against them, I think, at the time of kickoff, or maybe not. In Penn State, obviously, with the Ohio State win, would then beat a, have another top 10 win over Wisconsin. So, you know, what they've stated, I think they even said it during the release of the rankings on Tuesday. They, Kirby Hokut mentioned Washington's strength of schedule, which is a concern. But it, for the first time, you know, we're coming down to that value of a conference championship. And look, if no, what no one's talking about is if Washington State beats Washington in the Apple Cup, which could easily happen, then the point is moot.
Right.
You know, then it's done. And no one's talking about it. I'm all about ready to pick Washington State in that game the way they're playing right now with eight straight wins. So, yeah, I think the Pac-12's in danger. I think Louisville's all but out. The conversation doesn't even start for Louisville unless there is a two-loss conference champion to me, because Ohio State's sitting there, you know, if they win the rest of their game. So, and a part of me doesn't have a problem with that. We can talk about this or not, but this is the best the Big Ten's been in at least 10 years.
No, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, it is. Hey, Big Ten picks the president. Big Ten picks the playoff.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what.
That's right.
This is the Big Ten's month. Here's what I philosophically, and because these are humans discussing college football teams, I want to get your thought on this. Do you think that we will ever get consistency between whether we're valuing strength of schedule, whether we're valuing head-to-head, or whether it is the number of good wins? Because while Louisville wins a lot of eye test arguments with Lamar Jackson, they only have one top 25 win. Tigers have three. I mean, and we start to get down to these points where Washington, for example, you know, I was screaming for Oklahoma. Oklahoma only has one top 25 win. Washington only has one top 25 win. Now, I wonder if on a base level, and I'm trying to figure this out. We are still figuring out the college football playoff, and the selection committee might be as well. But I'm wondering if getting a lot of good wins is the most powerful thing you could have, second only to a conference championship.
Yeah, I mean, that's stated, not definitively, but in the evaluations on that piece of paper that they hand out, head-to-head, conference champion, and schedule strength are determining factors. I would just say that if you looked at Louisville right now, they're clearly playing better than Clemson. So, you know, then it just becomes how long are you going to hang on to that head-to-head game and strength of schedule. It may be moot if Louisville doesn't win the league or can't play for the league, and it looks like they won't. So that's an easy determining factor. It's when you only have four teams, this is the, you know, one of the reasons you say, sorry, you know, it's a musical chairs. There wasn't a seat left when the music stopped. But I would just remind people that Louisville's playing better than Clemson right now. I don't care if they took care of business at Wake Forest. You can either look at that as struggled for three quarters or outscored Wake Forest 34-0 in the fourth quarter. They struggled with Virginia. I'll give you that, but Clemson struggled with Pittsburgh. I mean, that was the worst loss of the day, in my opinion. I thought that of the three, I thought that Washington got handled at home by a quality team that damaged them the most. But I thought the worst loss was Clemson losing to a Pittsburgh team that hadn't really shown it was worthy of doing something like that.
Hey, Clemson's got more top 25. I mean, Pittsburgh's got more top 25 wins than Louisville does.
And they've also lost four games.
Yeah, so. I know. I agree with you. I think the most damning loss was Clemson's, and I think that even on not just this particular season, but also big picture, because one of the things that this Clemson team and this Clemson program has always been so proud of and more than happy to tell you about is how many games in a row Dabo Swinney's won in Death Valley and how many times Dabo Swinney has won against unranked opponents in Death Valley. And all of those streaks and the home winning streak, one of the longest in the country, all of it came to an end with Chris Blewett's field goal. No, I'm with you. I am picking Wake Forest to cover the spread because I think Clemson's a little bit shook up. I think that Clemson can rally from this for sure, but this is a fascinating spot in the ACC, and I just can't help but think that in the way that things are playing out on a very big picture level, that Clemson's going to get a college football playoff spot, and the consolation trophy for Louisville is going to be a Heisman trophy.
Yeah, I think so.
So, all right.
I just want to mention one more thing. This shouldn't come into play, but it has for me the whole season for Clemson. They're not the same as they were last year. They're not as dominating. They're not scoring as much. Something's missing with Deshaun Watson. He had to throw 70 times against Pittsburgh because they were behind for parts of the game. The other part was they couldn't run the ball. So that disturbed me. But again, I don't think that should necessarily come into play with the committee going, hey, they were a lot better last year. No, they're clearly one of the top five, let's say, teams right now.
But not ahead of Louisville, in Dennis Dodd's opinion.
I had them ahead of Louisville in my top 25 for the reasons I stated before. I thought they were playing better. And by the way, I'm not the only one. AP had them ahead of Clemson. So neither of us believe in the transitive property of poll ranking.
Right.
which says if everything else being equal, which it is right now, team A beats team B, team A is ranked ahead, not necessarily. And look, the committee has told us that, they don't believe in that with, in these first 3 years, but it is what it is.
What is the potential impact of, or to what extent do you think there can be controversy and not just fans upset, but real controversy, real outrage over the college football playoff rankings? And again, like you wrote for the site this week talking about the lack of transparency, and the, you know, all the people in that room, all the different ways that these teams are being analyzed. Is there a point where we start to question the ranking system, or is this going to become part of our annual tradition in college football?
Yeah, I think it's part of the annual tradition. We're just going to question it each week. They want us to question it each week. ESPN wants us to question it each week. They're not going to write that story about transparency. They're going to build up the suspense and, oh, this is the first time we've seen these rankings. Well, that's not true because somebody had to type that into the Chiron last night.
Yeah.
You know, I started thinking about that where they go from 25 to 1. No, that's not true. Somebody saw it. Maybe a production assistant, but anyway, I digress. Where it gets sticky is if there's a two-loss Big Ten champ, that's a discussion point. If there are multiple two-loss Power Five champions, but even then, you've got Louisville and you've got Ohio State in that situation to go in there. But because those teams wouldn't have played a 13th game, then that becomes a big discussion. We may have at least one Power Five two-loss champion in the Big Ten, but we just discussed that. I have no problem with two Big Ten teams being in and the Pac-12 and Big 12 being left out. I mean, talk about setting the table. Where is West Virginia with one loss? Is it 14 behind a three-loss USC? That kind of tells you where they're headed.
Yeah, the way I wrap my head around West Virginia is again back to this working theory and constantly evolving view of what the playoff committee likes, and maybe it's year to year, but right now the flavor seems to be quality wins. You know, that's like Alabama's got a whole bunch of them, Michigan and Ohio State have a whole bunch of them, and those seem to matter a whole bunch. And philosophically, I don't hate it. If you're trying to pick teams to play for the national championship, the team that has won the most games against quality opponents seems like a great place to start to me.
Yeah, No, I agree. I'll just throw this out there before, speaking of quality wins, before Saturday, Michigan had played four teams with winning records. That doesn't seem like a lot to me. Now, they beat Iowa. Actually, Iowa had a winning record, so now it's five. But going into Saturday, and that's why I went to that game in part, to see how good these guys are.
And then
playing their third road game in mid-November, and they didn't measure up. But again, it may not hurt them.
The group of five, the golden ticket, very interesting development with Western Michigan still undefeated, really taking care of business. I mean, Corey Davis is out here setting all kinds of receiving records. Zach Terrell is finishing off his career in stellar fashion. Jonvion Franklin, like, these are the core pieces of PJ Fleck's offense that have all been rowing the boat in Kalamazoo for the last 3 years, and they get jumped by a one-loss Boise State team in this week's playoff rankings. Is this setting up for the Mountain West champion, be it Boise State or San Diego State, to likely have the inroad to that group of five, regardless of what Western Michigan's record is?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, first of all, the group of five automatic qualifier has to win the conference. So, you know, none of this starts until, I guess, Western Michigan and or San Diego State or Boise State win that league. Now, Boise State does not have the tiebreaker right now in Wyoming in that division, but Wyoming's got a tough stretch. They've got San Diego State and New Mexico at home. That's going to be hard to win, but not impossible. So it could be a Wyoming in there in playing for the championship against, I guess it would be San Diego State, which is clinched in the other division. So, yeah, a long way to go. I guess they're, you know, Boise State has beaten Washington State, and maybe that's enough for them. But they also lost to a Wyoming, which just lost to UNLV in three overtimes. I've got a problem with that, because historically the committee has, first of all, Boise and Western Michigan shouldn't be 20 and 21st.
Right?
Boise State's ranked much higher in the human polls, I think. I go back to 14 with Marshall. It was undefeated for long stretches of the season, and the committee wouldn't even rank them. And they were in a, you know, they were in a league, I think that was Conference USA back then, was supposedly better than the MAC, and they refused the MAC to rank them. Western Michigan now 10-0, and my problem there is there's only two undefeated teams left in the country. What you're saying is Western Michigan plays a form of football so foreign to any of us that they can't possibly be any good. Well, that's not the case. It's the MAC. It's highly competitive. I need to look back and see the last undefeated champion there, because I bet it's been a long time, because that's that league tends to eat its own.
Well, you had a couple with the Jordan Lynch Northern Illinois teams. And,
that's right, in 13. You're right.
And I want to say that maybe even one of those teams got tripped up at the last minute, which I am not overlooking the chance that Western Michigan goes 12-0, but then ends up stubbing its toe in the MAC title game. That has certainly happened. And you're right to point out that just because Western Michigan goes 12-0, they need to get that last conference championship, which won't be handed out until December 2nd, December 3rd, in order to be able to make it to the group of five spot in the New Year's Six.
Northern Illinois did have a loss going into that Orange Bowl. So
the but they beat Florida State, right?
No, they got worked by Florida.
They got worked by Florida State.
It was like 31-10 or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, yes. That was just that was a game where it was a little bit of foreign football, because I think there was just such a difference in side to side speed on that team.
Yeah, it was. But that's not our discussion. You know, our discussion now is just who deserves to be in the Cotton Bowl, by the way. The Cotton Bowl is the only spot that team can play.
You mean the group of five representatives?
Yes, the group of five team. Yes.
Gotcha. All right. Well, as we look ahead to a busy week 12, in the SEC, we've got an LSU team that will be hosting Florida. It is likely the last home game for Leonard Fournette. Do you think it is the last home game for LSU coach Ed Orgeron?
You know, I've actually got a story coming out on that today, or this week, sorry. you know, they'd contacted Jimbo Fisher. That news came out Tuesday, which to me is, yeah, what took them so long?
Right,
And why is that a surprise? At this exact moment a year ago, multiple sources had said they were working towards a contract with Jimbo Fisher. So I don't even know how to take that right now. You know, if Orgeron keeps winning and wins out, say, politically, does it become impossible for Joe Oliva to hire Jimbo Fisher? There are so many people that love Ed Orgeron that he's the easy hire, or the, you know, to keep him in that place. So I you know, again, he's done this 2 years in a row without having a clear plan. You don't fire Les Miles after 4 weeks unless you know you've got a replacement, and you go after him right away. At the time, it looked like Tom Herman. People have cooled on Tom Herman because Houston's lost twice. Okay, Jimbo Fisher, is he going to come? Money's not an issue, in my opinion. The money's kind of a push. I think it's where can you eat more easily win championships. And for Jimbo Fisher, that's Florida State. I think LSU, as good as they've been under Les Miles, and that shouldn't be undervalued, starts every season with a you know, with a, staring up at a cement ceiling with Alabama.
Yeah.
In the best of times. Sometimes it's they're third. But I think the take now at places like LSU and the SEC is, well, Nick can't stay forever. And when he does step down, he's 65, you know, we want to be poised there to stay competitive and win national championships. But again, that might not be for a long, long time.
Wow.
So I would not venture to guess which way LSU is going, because they've shown to be ill-prepared 2 years in a row to be definitive on any of this.
Are you caught up in the SEC East heat with Florida and Tennessee trying to see who can lose the least?
Yeah, right. that speaks to our point about the SEC not having, having one New Year's Six entrant, and that's only because they're guaranteed a spot in the Sugar Bowl. It's possible on December 3rd that everybody in the league has at least three losses, and then there's Alabama. In fact, that could be the case as soon as Saturday when LSU plays Florida, which, by the way, it looks like it's a boat race now, because Florida has so many players injured. Their offense is so stultifying, and now they have to go to the Baton Rouge, obviously, in Tiger Stadium, because of this rescheduled game. I would dare say LSU is a prohibitive favorite in this game.
Yeah, I think that LSU gets Texas A&M in its final regular season game, a Texas A&M team that is banged up, it's setting up pretty well for LSU to, yes, finish with three losses, but also have, I guess, the second best record in the SEC West.
Yeah.
And if that's the spot where LSU is, I think that they're a good favorite for the Sugar Bowl. And if LSU just got to the Sugar Bowl, you know, then it's not a terrible spot for the Tigers to be, regardless of where they go at head coach. You know, and there was a fear, Dennis, there was a fear that this was going to be a lost season. I had that fear, at least.
I wrote that. I said they're throwing the season away, and they know they're throwing the season away to get their guy. That's why you fire him after four games. I didn't really have – if that's – what they're doing, then okay, that's definitive. Now they're caught. No one. I don't think anyone could have seen that. There was speculation from the beginning that Ed Orgeron might get the job. But look, we've seen 100 interim coaches, including Ed Orgeron at USC, do well, and they're just dismissed out of hand. Now it's just become this thing. You know, the loss to Alabama was bad, but now it's being couched as, well, if they just had a quarterback and just did this, and, you know, they played Alabama close, and if he finishes and wins all the games, he should be given a chance. Yeah, maybe, perhaps, but that wasn't the plan. Mm. That's my point. You had to have a plan on whatever it was October 1st when Joe Oliva pulled the string. And that's my problem with him. It's basically with him. It's not LSU. Whoever they get, may end up being great, but this has been a clunky process.
And if you're a head coach, doesn't that factor into your decision making about whether you want to insert yourself, your livelihood, and your career into the hands of that administration?
If it's Jimbo Fisher or not, my first question is to Joe Oliva: how long are you going to be here? Do you have the support of the administration? Do you want to be here long term? Because if it isn't Jimbo Fisher, there's going to be a faction that's rained down holy hell on him. You know, if it's Ed Orgeron or someone else, that, you know, why couldn't you land Jimbo? And, you know, why'd you put us through this 2 years in a row? So I've stated that before. That's my first question of anybody who comes in the door.
Washington, you mentioned, Azeem Victor goes down, Joe Mathis goes down. This mm-hmm. Huskies team is getting banged up. Certainly the way that USC beat Washington was a little concerning because it looks like there's starting to be a little bit of a blueprint on how to beat this Washington team, and there are more challenging games coming up ahead. But Washington State not only has its own Pac-12 North future to look ahead to, as you mentioned, maybe even picking them for that Apple Cup, but they also are going to play a key role in the Pac-12 South race, traveling to Colorado. The Buffs, we were talking about unlikely conference champions. Do you give this Colorado team a shot? They are favored by 4.5 against Washington State at home this weekend. Then they get to host Utah. It is extremely beneficial that both of these final two games for the Buffs happen in Boulder.
Yeah.
Do you think that they're going to be able to take care of business in these final two games and win the South?
Yeah, I don't see why not.
Wow.
They've proved it to this point.
Sefo Lufau
does not turn the ball over. The defense has been the thing for Mike McIntyre. And, you know, the teams they've beaten so far have been, you know, have shown that they're worthy. They did it, you know, early on with Oregon when we thought Oregon was good, you know, was somewhat good. And they haven't stopped. So, yeah, I think absolutely they can do it with those two games at home. That being said, so can Washington State. If they somehow pull this out this week, then they control things in the Apple Cup against Washington.
See, I think Colorado could play spoiler to the Big Ten, because if we start to get into quality losses,
mm-hmm.
I mean, Colorado's losses are to Michigan and USC.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good resume, especially if they can also have a Washington win on top of that. But that's getting 3 weeks down the line.
Yep.
No sense in trotting down that far. But
you're starting to talk about Rose Bowl, too, in that situation for them, too.
As a highest ranked Pac-12 team,
Washington goes to the playoff.
Do you think that that's going to become the jockeying for those spots is going to become as much of a competition point as we continue to settle into this playoff era? I think our focus is so intense on the top four. I don't think the college football world in general is talking about some of this.
Well, no, they're not, because, you know, it only becomes a discussion point if the Pac-12 is in the playoff, which, you know, nothing is assured of that right now. But if Washington gets in, really it's only Washington's right now. If they get in, then it just becomes the highest ranked Pac-12 team by the committee. And, you know, who would that be at that point? Not Washington State, which probably would have lost to Washington.
It'd be USC or Colorado.
It'd be USC or Colorado. And you know, if USC does not play in the Pac-12 championship game, that probably helps their case, because they'd be sitting there at 9-3 and maybe ranked ahead of Colorado, who would have lost in that scenario in the champ game. So you're right.
So after spending all those years with computers and formulas, mm-hmm. now we've just gone back to the same flexibility that made bowl selection great in the 1980s.
Well, actually a worse process, because we don't, at least from 1936 to 1997, when we went strictly by the polls and picking a national champion and populating the bowls, we at least had a vote total every week. We knew where teams stood. First place votes. We had, you know, guys would release their ballots now and then. This, we've got nothing. And it's not a secret. It is a secret for them, but it's no secret. It's a secret. Does that make any sense?
Yes, absolutely.
It's been that way since the beginning. And no one seems to mind. I just had to call them out this week and say that the ultimate test of any voting process is its degree of transparency. And there is none here. there's no vote totals. There's no individual ballots. They shuffle the deck every week and spit out stuff. We're supposed to trust them because of these august people in the room, and they are. They're good people. I know them. They have credibility. But I don't want to think that, for instance, Barry Alvarez is dominating the discussion because he's a strong personality and a Big Ten guy. I don't want to believe that.
But
I can't totally dismiss it.
Right.
Or Tom Osborne or Condoleezza Rice or pick one of those people, because I've been through the mock process and it happens. So I just had to write that this week and just, you know, point that out because, you know, first of all, they can't keep the thing populated. They've lost three people to health reasons in the last 15 months, I think it is. So they're a man down or a woman down now at 12. And it's a hard process. It's overwrought. It's overhyped. You don't need to fly 1,700 miles every week to do this process. I thought they could have done it every other week. Certainly don't do it the week before Pick'em Day, because then you paint yourself in a box. You know, take a breather there, and then let everything play out. But it's a very secretive process, and you know the people that own it own the playoff. ESPN aren't going to say anything. You know, they've taken it the other direction. They're super analyzing it. They're celebrating the secrecy by, you know, speculating on what the committee's thinking. Well, it's a weekly process and not telling us anything. You know, dodge, weave, bob, don't get backed into a corner. See you next week. I don't like it.
I don't either. It's just word salad.
We're just
killing airtime and like just a bunch of mouth breathers out here talking about something that doesn't matter. Come on.
And we do it too. I'm going to check the site. We got
it. Yeah, no, I mean, no doubt.
It's
I mean,
different.
It's, Dennis, we'll survive. Thank you so much for your time. I think that eventually we'll settle in. I mean, this has just got to be the awkward growth period of the college football playoff. That's what I keep reminding myself, is over time, we'll settle into some kind of rhythm, but it's just impossible to think that it's going to be smooth here at the beginning.
Yeah, it wasn't easy in 14. It was pretty easy last year. It has a chance of being, chaos at the end. But, you know, again, we're being conditioned already now that Washington's going to be left out. As we mentioned, Western Michigan, there's a chance they may be left out. And I think at the end of the day, you know, there's going to be no outcry because we've been conditioned to this.
Yeah, ESPN doesn't want the college football playoff to expand because pushing the fear and anxiety that your conference will be left out is just so much more profitable.
Right. That's right. It's reality television. But, you know, it's one thing to be the housewives of Atlanta. There's another thing to evaluate the Cardinals of Louisville. It's a different thing.
Have you used that before?
I used it in my story yesterday, yes.
Oh, that's good. That's good stuff. That's why he's a senior college football columnist. He's good with the words. Thanks, Dennis. I appreciate it.
All right, Chip. Thanks.